Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Guess what, Will?
What's that, Mango?
I've been trying to write a promo for our podcast, Part-Time Genius, but even though we've done over 250 episodes, we don't really talk about murders or cults.
I mean, we did just cover the Illuminati of cheese, so I feel like that makes us pretty edgy. We also solve mysteries like how Chinese is your Chinese food and how do dollar stores make money? And then, of course, can you game a dog show?
So what you're saying is everyone should be listening.
Listen to Part-Time Genius on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I am an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as usual, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Hey there! So, ladies and gentlemen, this is it. The grand finale. The curtain sweeps down. The spotlight goes out on our beloved Chris Paulette. It is his final Tech Stuff episode. This is not a joke. We may eventually be able to get him back on as a guest, but this is his final episode as a host of Tech Stuff. And he got to choose whatever topic he wanted. Unfortunately, almost all of them were ones we had already covered.
Well, actually, it surprised me that we didn't have a podcast on the person that we wanted to talk about today.
We've mentioned him in several podcasts.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But
definitely one of Tech's more colorful characters.
Right, and that of course, is the wonderful wizard named Woz.
Yes, Steve Wozniak. Wozniak. Mm-hmm.
Stephen Gary Wozniak. Yeah, one of the co-founders of Apple. Yeah, he was born in on August 11th, 1950. And he came from a family that was technologically inclined.
Oh, yes.
His dad was an engineer at a little company called Lockheed Martin.
I feel like I've heard of that company somewhere.
And he, as a kid, he became very interested in engineering and electronics. Did you hear about what his favorite book series was that kind of inspired him?
No, actually, I don't think I did.
It was the I looked at a lot of interviews. He's actually, if you've never seen an interview with Wozniak, he's a very animated individual.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well-spoken, very passionate about what he does. It's clear that he truly enjoys technology.
Like,
there's no irony there. He just loves it. And though he doesn't necessarily love all the things that we do with technology or the way that companies handle technology. He actually is not such a big fan of big companies.
Yeah.
But we'll get into that. But no, as a kid, his favorite book series was the Tom Swift series.
Ah, yes.
So Tom Swift, if you don't know, he's a young man who was a kind of an engineer who could build just about anything. He had his own company. He would fight evil and solve mysteries and things of that nature. And in fact, just as a tangent, Tom Swift plays a role in a totally different technology. It has nothing to do with Wozniak. Do you happen to know what Tom Swift? It's actually Tom Swift's name is lent in a way to this technology.
Really?
Yeah, it's Taser.
Oh, right.
Taser stands. Taser's technically an acronym. It stands for Thomas A. Swift's Electric Rifle.
You know, I think we mentioned that a long time ago when we talked about the Taser.
Yeah, I think so. But yeah, he in an interview, he credited the Tom Swift books as igniting his imagination at the idea of creating things like electronics and being able to have kind of, you know, the equivalent of these adventures. And having a dad who was an engineer at Lockheed Martin didn't hurt, because it turned out he had a really good person to go to when those science fairs came up in elementary school.
Well, yeah, yeah. And it certainly wouldn't have hurt his interest in technology to have a family that understood and supported those interests, too. They go, oh, you know, hey,
yeah,
this is something I like, too. So, you know, but
yeah.
We should stop clowning around, he said foolishly. Sorry, that was a Tom Swifty.
Nice. He credited his dad and some of his teachers in elementary school as really inspiring him. Essentially, he said that, you know, when he started to excel at science, the teachers responded, and that just drove him to make even more accomplishments in that area. So by the time he was in sixth grade, he actually built a fairly primitive but a working computer that could play tic-tac-toe. And, you know, we all know from the documentary War Games that it's just a short hop, skip, and a jump from tic-tac-toe to thermonuclear war.
Of course. You know.
Shall we play a game?
Thanks, Whopper.
Hey, nice. You remembered the name and everything.
Oh, yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah, I've watched that documentary several times.
So
the old cup modems where you actually had to put the
phone in a cradle.
The phone in a cradle. And I'm sure actually Woz probably remembers those days, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll get into that a little bit, too. But yeah, Woz has also got a bit of a mischievous streak in him.
A bit of a mischievous streak? That was a bit of an understatement.
Yeah, we'll get to it. Well, in sixth grade, he also got his ham radio license. So, obviously, he was very much interested in electronics and technology and communication. All of these things would play a very large role in his choices further down the line.
Mm-hmm.
And according to Woz, he said he never took any courses on building electronics or computers. He just learned how to do that all on his own, at least in the elementary and high school years.
Yeah.
Once you get to college, he actually was pursuing originally when he first enrolled, he was pursuing a degree in electrical engineering and computer science at the University of California at Berkeley.
Yeah, and that's sort of a lesson for all of us, you know. Sometimes programming and fiddling with electronics and those kinds of things can seem really daunting, and it feels like, you know, you start dabbling in it and it feels like you need a degree in computer science or electrical engineering to do these things. You don't. You just have to have an interest and get the right place to start.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It also helps to surround yourself with other fellow enthusiasts.
Yeah, and it didn't hurt that Woz is categorically a genius in certain arenas. So that gave him a leg up as well. But
details.
Yeah, both in high school and in college, he began to associate with other people who were really interested in electronics and technology.
Mm-hmm.
He was part of a homebrew computer club.
Yes, that would be the homebrew computer club. Yeah, back in the mid-70s, was at the University of California at Berkeley. He was interested in attending this nearby computer club, the Homebrew Computer Club. And there were actually quite a few people of note who were part of this.
Yeah.
But they were interested in, before we get into the details of that kind of thing, this group was really kind of interested in what you could do with computers, because in the mid-1970s, we weren't talking about machines like the Apple II, where you had a monitor sitting on top of a computer with a keyboard and you would program stuff. I mean, they were interested in large part in things like the Altair, which had no monitor.
Right.
You would read the output of this device by the blinking lights, or, you know, in German, das Blinkenlicht.
Yes.
As many jokes have gone. But really, I mean, it wasn't something that the average person would probably be likely in picking up, simply because there was kind of a barrier of entry. It was hard to understand for people who were sort of passingly interested in it. And we'd talked about the IBMs and the machines that corporate customers would use, where you had punch cards and you know, printing and large storage devices and things like that. Well, yeah, I mean, those were far more easy in some ways to understand, because there were more ways to interact with those machines, but they were also hugely expensive,
yeah,
and took up a lot more space than something like the Altair. This is the kind of device that got people thinking, you know, I could have a computer in my house. I could do things with a computer. I could program this thing. This could be fun. What could I do with this?
Yeah.
And that's really what this group was all about. And there were other people interested in this as well, like a guy named Jobs.
Yeah.
And I
yeah.
believe a couple guys named Alan and Gates, too,
yeah.
Show up in the logs. And there were other people who interacted with all of those guys that floated in and out of that culture out there in California around that time.
Yeah, this is the birth of the personal computer age. I mean, we're talking about the very early days, and you know, of course, Wozniak plays a very large role in that. But it also he had other interests in finding out how stuff works, which, you know, we can appreciate.
Yep.
Like the phone system.
Oh yeah.
He was known to engage in a little phone freaking now and then.
Yep.
We actually have talked about phone freaking in the past. Essentially, what phone freaking was finding out how the telephone system worked, and then exploiting that knowledge by being able to create things that would allow you to make free phone calls. Usually, it would involve recreating a certain kind of tone.
Yes.
That the phone would then not recognize the fact that you were dialing. It wouldn't register that. So it would act as if the line had not been engaged, whereas you could actually make the call for free. So there were a lot of different kits that you could do this with. There, of course, was the famous whistle.
Yes.
The Cap'n Crunch whistle, where you could whistle into a phone and with this particular toy whistle that came in the serial, and it would recreate the exact pitch you needed in order to hack the phone system. That changed before too long, and they had to start creating electronic devices that could generate – normally it would be two tones together – to be able to actually hack into a phone system.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if you haven't done any research into phone freaking or listened to the podcast from, man, that was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago.
Basically, the deal was that they had the system in place so that the phone company could do maintenance work, and the phone technicians out in the field could use these certain codes. In the case of one of them, it was a high E played three times.
Yeah.
And that would unlock the system. It was a very analog system at that point. And, you know, the phone company actually published
the
information on this in their Bell Technical Journal, which was available at your local library. And certain people figured this out. And a whistle, this is famous because a famous phone freaker named Cap'n Crunch is named that because he realized that the toy whistle that you found in a box of cereal, I'll let you guess which brand.
Lucky Charms.
Yes, exactly. How did you know?
Yeah.
You could play exactly that note.
Yep.
That's all you needed. All you had to do was know the code and have that whistle. And of course, Bell went nuts trying to get that copy of the technical journal back.
Yeah.
Off the shelves.
That's when they realized that this was a mistake.
Yes.
To let that information get outside the door of Bell.
Yeah.
That was not a great move.
Well, we published this. You're not supposed to want to read about it.
Yeah. But people who were interested in electronics, I mean, clearly something as complex as the telephone system would be fascinating to them. And that included people like Wozniak.
Yes, absolutely. And it's famous that he and Steve Jobs were actually building phone phreaking systems for other people.
Yeah.
And trying to sell them, which they did, right, on a small scale.
Yeah. And that, which kind of, well, set the ground for their future endeavors together. He actually did withdraw from the University of California before completing his degree and began to work for Hewlett-Packard.
Yep.
And was an engineer there. He actually worked specifically on designing calculators.
Yes.
Meanwhile, Jobs kind of came up with this idea. Now, but when you talk about Jobs and Wozniak, they had very different roles in those early days of Apple.
Yes.
Right? Steve Jobs was an idea guy. He was a business guy and he was a marketing guy. More than anything else, he was a marketing genius.
Yeah. I've been reading Isaacson's biography of Steve Jobs, and I'm still not quite done with it yet, but I have passed through the early stages of Apple through there. And apparently when they were working on the Apple I, which was a very basic computer, as a matter of fact, it had the very early machines weren't really machines. They were a set of boards,
yeah,
basically motherboards and pieces that you would assemble into a case and use it as a computer. Which sold for, as Jonathan likes to point out, the sum of $666.66.
That's because Wozniak likes repeating digits.
Yeah, apparently, according to them, it had nothing to do with the symbolic nature of this in religion.
Right.
It was more
of a theological reason.
Yeah, but it's hard to imagine that it...
It's an Apple computer.
Yes.
Of course,
they also say that Apple was chosen for other reasons than the.
Yeah, that's funny because Wozniak said that he had just guessed at some point that the reason why Steve Jobs wanted to call the company Apple was that Steve Jobs had worked for a while at an orchard in either Washington or Oregon, and that perhaps gave him the idea, which may or may not be the case. Because he said the thing about Jobs was that he would come up with ideas, but not necessarily explain to you how he came up with them.
Yeah, that's true.
We also should point out that there was this time in Jobs' life where he was expanding his consciousness a little bit.
Yes. Jobs attended Reed College up in Oregon and did not finish there, but was very interested in a number of things, including expanding one's horizons to the use of chemical substances.
Yes, that's a very, very diplomatic way of putting it.
That's not... I don't get the sense that Woz is interested in that. I think he likes to expand his consciousness through technological means.
Which, again, shows that difference. Jobs was this marketer, and Wozniak was the engineer. He was the guy who was really designing the technology.
Yeah. That was actually exactly my point, was according to the Isaacson story, Woz wanted to give away the design for the original boards for the Apple I, and Jobs said, no, we could sell this thing. We could make a company. And that intrigued Woz just enough to go, let's give it a try.
Yeah, because before at the Homebrew Computer Club, Wozniak would distribute designs that he would come up with for computer kits.
Yeah.
He would design them on paper, and then he would just distribute copies of it to the other members. And Jobs was getting to the point where he's like, if we didn't give these away for free, I bet people would pay for them. And so, he convinced Wozniak to go in with him on a venture together. And this was the idea of Apple.
Yeah, and it wasn't easy. Wozniak was a little reticent to leave HP. I mean, you think about it. If your buddy is telling you, hey, let's go start a company, meanwhile, you're in with a very strong technology company and you got a good job, it's secure. And it's like, well, on the one hand, you got the allure of this opportunity to do something really cool. But hey, there's not a lot of security in it. Starting your own company can be a challenge, and it can be a lot of work, and it can be scary.
Yeah, and at first,
no guarantee.
Right. At first, he did continue to work with HP. He didn't quit immediately.
No.
And in fact, one of the stories about founding Apple is that they had to, in order to raise the capital they needed, which was not that much by today's standards. I mean, even if you were to convert it into today's dollars, it was a fairly low investment. In fact, that was one of the things that Steve Jobs was able to use to convince Wozniak to try it, was because the investment was not going to be prohibitively large.
Right.
But it still required that they raise some capital, and they did it by selling off stuff that they owned. And Wozniak sold off his beloved scientific calculator.
Yes, which at the time was a pretty hot piece of technology.
Yeah, for around something to the tune of around $500 at the time, which, you know, in the 70s, it's still a good chunk of change, right? But it was even more so back then. And the interesting thing to me was that when I read an interview, a more recent interview, Wozniak really downplayed that. He said, well, here's the thing. I was still technically working for HP, and because I worked for HP, I could buy the next new calculator before it came out and at a lower price than I did the older calculator. So I thought, even if this company that I'm working on with Jobs goes belly up, I still have the protection of working for this other company, and I can get my calculator back.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Which is an important part of context that I think a lot of people miss. The Apple I did reasonably well within those circles, and they started working on the Apple II. Mm-hmm. Jobs played a good part in getting it into stores, but Wozniak had a lot to do with the back end of that machine.
Yeah.
Especially the basic language implementation. There we go.
He was unfamiliar with BASIC at first, and
which is kind of funny.
It's funny. It's
he was good with hard, but not with BASIC.
Yeah. It's also funny that he got really he started to really study the BASIC version that HP uses, which is not the same as the BASIC language that Bill Gates was working on.
Yeah.
So he was coming at it from a different approach, because he was, you know, I think at the time he was actually working under the assumption that it was essentially the same thing, but it turned out it was two different versions of BASIC, two pretty significant different versions. Also, I should point out, so they founded Apple in 1976, and it was just 1977 when Apple II came out.
Right.
So that first Apple, we should really point out, it was more like almost like a run of prototypes. They only made a relatively small number of these, because for one thing, they didn't know how big the demand was going to be. They knew that their fellow computer enthusiasts would enjoy this kind of thing, because they also shared the vision that computers would one day be an integral part of our lives.
Right.
But at the time, the average person, like the average consumer, didn't necessarily have any desire or need for a computer, or at least they didn't think they did.
Right.
And so it was definitely not a sure thing when they were first getting started. But 1977, the Apple II comes out, and I think you could describe its success as being meteoric.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, that's one of the reasons that Wozniak says that he worked so hard on the BASIC structure for the 6502 microprocessor.
Yep.
was simply that he realized that BASIC was going to be a big help to people who were going to adopt these. And he wanted people to understand that computers could play a significant role in their personal lives. And so he said, you know, this is, you know, I basically hunkered down to do this because I knew this was going to be important. And that's something that you see when you look at Steve Wozniak's career, is that he obviously he's willing to put his back into it and really work on something that he is very passionate about, like this. There were other things too. He talks about having to write the disk operating software for the earlier machines, and this was not something that he was familiar with.
Yeah, he had never really used magnetic storage like that.
But he made it work.
Yep.
Because he knew it was important. Not to discount other people all over the world who do this every day, but I'm saying, you know, as we are looking at Steve Wozniak, this is, technology is clearly part of his DNA.
Yeah.
And he needs to make it work. One of the things that I read about him too in the Isaacson, biography of Jobs was that, apparently he was just really good at finding innovative solutions to the challenges that came up while they were creating the actual machines. His engineering expertise, it's more than just It's sort of like a virtuoso in a musical instrument. You have people who can play the instrument, but there are very few people that can pick it up and do something really brilliant with it that you wouldn't expect to do because they don't teach this. It's just the thing that you sort of
innately have.
Yeah. And apparently he just got that ability to look at a technology and know how it works and go, well, you know what? I know this isn't working this way. Just for kicks, let's plug this in this way and see if that works.
Yeah, he had a real interesting attitude, too. He said that, you know, in general, like in a broad stroke, he said if he could build a machine that had 200 chips in it, he would then look at that design and say, how can I build a machine that does the exact same thing this thing does, but with 150 chips? And he would do it. And then after that, he'd say, okay, well, how can I build a machine that does all the things this machine does, but only with 100 chips? And just continuously refine that design so that it was more and more elegant and more efficient in each iteration. That was sort of his thought process, which is, you know, that's a good thing.
Well, it's funny you should mention that because there is another story. That Jobs and Wozniak were working together at Atari to develop a game machine. Now, I don't think Wozniak was – if my memory serves, it's been a few days since I've read that. If memory serves, Wozniak wasn't actually working for Atari.
Mm-hmm.
Jobs actually kind of convinced him to work on this project. But they were supposed to – they were trying to create this machine, and the challenge was it's like, hey, you know, if you can do this with – fewer chips in this time period, we'll go ahead and go with this idea. So Jobs knew that Wozniak had the expertise to make it work, and he did. The point of doing this was to save money because these chips were not cheap.
Mm-hmm.
So the fewer components that you could use on the circuit board, the more money you could save in doing that and make the project more cost efficient in the end. And thanks to Woz, they actually made it work. Of course, they're known for Breakout.
Right.
The two of them both worked on Breakout, which is a classic Atari game. That paid off both on that project and their work they did for Apple because they would continually revise the design to make it more cost efficient and make it more effective. Because Woz is one of those people that believes that technology should be accessible to people.
Yeah. That's crazy.
I was going to say, well, you might say, well, hey, Apple is known for having high-priced computers. What are you talking about?
High-priced computers and closed systems.
Yes.
Two things that you would imagine would be antithetical to that philosophy.
Well, that's true. But I would argue that we need to take a look at the exit of Wozniak from Apple because a lot of that – did not surround the Apple II. The Apple II was a very affordable machine, which is why it ended up in a lot of people's homes in a lot of schools.
Yeah. So in order to get there, we need to get back to like about, well, 1980s when Apple went public.
Yes.
And that was, of course, a big event.
Oh, huge.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted.
Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Guess what, Bango?
What's that, Will?
So iHeart is giving us a whole minute to promote our podcast, Part-Time Genius.
I know. That's why I spent my whole week composing a haiku for the occasion. It's about my emotional journey in podcasting over the last 7 years, and it's called Earthquake House.
Mango, I'm going to cut you off right there. Why don't we just tell people about our show instead?
Yeah, that's a better idea. So every week on Part-Time Genius, we feed our curiosity by answering the world's most important questions. Things like, when did America start dialing 911? Is William Shatner's best acting work in Esperanto? Also, what happened to Esperanto?
Plus, we cover questions like how Chinese is your Chinese food? How do dollar stores stay in business? And of course, is there an Illuminati of cheese?
There absolutely is, and we are risking our lives by talking about it. But if you love mind-blowing facts, incredible history, and really bad jokes, make your brains happy and tune in to Part-Time Genius.
Listen to Part-Time Genius on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everyone. I'm Mark.
I'm Greg.
I'm Brendan.
And this is a trailer for a new podcast called Get It to Dutch, A Screenwriter's Journey.
It's about screenwriting.
And a journey. The three of us play aspiring screenwriters on a quest to get a hit Hollywood script to famous producer Dutch Huxley.
Well, I would say one of us is aspiring and the other two are sort of struggling.
Which one of us is aspiring?
Well, they're going to have to listen to the podcast.
But I don't know, and I made the podcast.
Well, I made the podcast, and I think you guys were along for the ride.
Each week, we bring in a script, we read it, and then we give each other notes.
And you'll also hear about our adventures navigating the Hollywood system.
The show features amazing guests like Tim Robinson, Lily Sullivan, Weird Al Yankovic, and Rob Hubel.
Like any great blockbuster, it's filled with heartbreak, adventure, suspense, and just a little tasteful nudity.
And some distasteful nudity.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that, guys.
Listen to Get It to Dutch, A Screenwriter's Journey on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And 1981 was a huge year for Wozniak in both triumph and tragedy.
Yes.
In 1981, he returned to UC Berkeley to finish out his degree in electrical engineering and computer science under an assumed name.
I would also guess that he probably cruised through a lot of that.
Probably. Yeah, the fact that there may have been courses that were referring to his own work might have done that. But also that year, Wozniak's a man who has a lot of different interests, and one of those was piloting airplanes.
Yes,
and he owned his own private airplane at this point because Apple very quickly was a huge success. You know, it launched in 1976, and by 1981, he had enough to have his own private plane.
Yes.
And he was piloting his private plane and crashed while trying to take off at the Santa Cruz Sky Park.
Yes.
And it was a pretty serious crash, and he was very badly hurt.
Yes.
In that accident.
Yeah, he suffered from amnesia for quite some time after that.
Yeah, he had a lot of different injuries, memory loss. It took about 2 years of rehabilitation for him to get back to how he was before the accident. But around that time, the Apple II was really starting to become a true success story, like a huge success story in personal computing. And by 1983... So this is just a couple years after Apple's gone public, 3 years after Apple's gone public. The company was valued at $985 million if you looked at its stock.
Like yes.
If you were to value the company by how much stock was out there and the price that the stock was trading at. So just under $1 billion. And again, the company's not even 10 years old yet. So, you know, Wozniak's work was really starting to pay off for the company and for Wozniak at the time.
Yep. He also, in addition to this, while he was going through his recovery period, got involved in another one of his passions, which is music.
Yes.
Hosted the now infamous US Festivals in California, which were known for being huge. I mean, they're very, very large events. Think of things like you know, Lollapalooza now or Lilith Fair. I mean, kinds events like that.
You're really dating yourself.
I know I am, but but I don't go to large outdoor events like that or the US Festival. Well, yeah, but they did have a diverse line of different kinds of music.
Let's say Coachella.
There. Yes, actually, they were sort of in competition in to some degree because Coachella had been out for many years, more than a decade, out in California. But they it was sort of a blend of technology and music, which makes me think more of South by Southwest than that. But at that time, that's not the kind of events that were going on. They were more, I think, inspired from the many years earlier Woodstock and events like that, where it was just the large outdoor music festivals. But they were also known for extravagance. You know, there were some artists like Van Halen and David Bowie who were taking home more than $1 million in early 82 and 83, the early 80s, I mean, and which were tremendous sums of money at that point.
Yeah.
And it's, I think, regarded by a lot of people now, the US Festival is sort of a punchline to a joke, although I'm not sure what the setup would be. But I don't know that it was completely unsuccessful. I just think that it was sort of a tribute to Woz's generosity and the fact that, I mean, he paid people really, you know, generous sums of money. But I think he was just having a good time with a lot of people.
Yeah, he also took this time to start getting into philanthropy.
Yes.
He began to really invest specifically in the education system near his own home. He began to help schools get computers and training on how to use the computers. He was very enthusiastic at fostering education, which is no surprise considering, you know, his father had helped him, and he does credit his, you know, several teachers went in his elementary school days as really being the inspiration for him to pursue his interests. So it's not a big surprise that he wanted to kind of pay it forward and do that on himself. So he began to do that. And in fact, his contributions to technology and philanthropy led up to him receiving the award, the National Medal of Technology in 1985. He was awarded that by the United States president, who at the time was Ronald Reagan, and received that. And it's the highest honor bestowed on America's inventors and innovators.
Yes, the award has come up several times over the course of Tech Stuff. You know, probably Woz is one of the people we would actually have heard of.
Yeah.
They were – Woz and Jobs were sort of rock stars in the early 80s.
Yeah.
Because of the prominence of the Apple II. And, you know, there were cover stories on magazines, business magazines, and news magazines about these guys. They were sort of well known. Of course, Jobs is a little bit more outspoken. He's known as the – you know, more the marketing face of the company, especially recently, but even back then in the early days of the company. As technology went on at Apple, though, as things started to change and they started focusing on diversifying the lines, Woz, you know, was sort of not as integral to the creation of machines like the Apple III, the Lisa, and the Macintosh, like he had been with the Apple II. And I think that was partially due, of course, to the accident and the need for his recovery. He just wasn't as available during that time as he would have been otherwise.
Yeah, and then by 1985, big changes were happening at Apple. The biggest was that Steve Jobs left the company.
Yes.
In 1985, and that, depending on how you define it, he was either fired because he was having some really nasty conflicts with Apple's board of directors.
Yes.
Or he was just marginalized to the point where he just stopped showing up to work. But really, I mean, essentially they kept giving him a smaller role over time and distancing him, Steve Jobs, that is, away from the main operations of Apple. And so Steve Jobs left in 1985. Wozniak stuck around with Apple for a couple more years. He would not leave the company until 1987.
Yes, and to some degree, he still holds a consulting role with the company today.
Yes.
He left the company, but Apple still, I guess it's safe to say they never completely severed their relationship, although he doesn't go into work there like he used to.
And you wouldn't necessarily call him an Apple evangelist either. I mean, he says in frequent interviews, he will say, or frequently in interviews, I should say, he will say he loves Apple, but yeah. at the same time, he is not shy to criticize Apple for things that he views as failures or as mistakes.
Yeah.
He's known for being very honest and very upfront and just, giving his opinion. He's a straight shooter when it comes to that. And not in necessarily a mean way.
Right.
But very matter of fact.
Yeah. Yeah. When he started to work on some other projects, one of the first was CL9,
yes.
which was a company that was known for creating the first programmable universal remote.
Yep. And so this again shows that Wozniak's interest in electronics was still very, very high. I think Wozniak's one of those guys who really likes to find a new challenge. And, once he's done that, once he's managed to accomplish whatever that challenge is, then he's ready to move on to the next one.
Yeah.
In fact, again, from listening to him talk, I would say that that's just one of those things he really values is the idea of innovation, research and development, building new stuff, and not just making constant improvements over older technology. In fact,
right.
that might have been one of the reasons why he left Apple was that he was starting to see Apple turn into this company that was more interested in releasing incremental updates
yes.
to its technology rather than truly innovating and building something that's really cool. And in fact, that's a criticism that he has leveled recently at Apple over the last few years, saying that Apple seems to be content to release new versions of truly innovative and amazing products. He loves things like the iPad and the iPhone and all that. He thinks those are great. But what he doesn't think is great is that Apple seems to be content to just give updates to those products rather than try and create something wholly new. Now, that may not be completely fair. There may be some things developing at Apple about which we know nothing that could blow our minds any day now, like the Apple TV that we keep on hoping will come out. But, the perception that Wozniak has is that Apple's not currently really in that innovative space. In fact, recently he said that Microsoft was showing more of that sort of innovative approach. Doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a success for Microsoft, but he was saying that, Windows 8, Windows Phone 8, the Surface tablet, all of that was kind of pointing, it was such a radical departure from the stuff that Microsoft had been doing that it was a much more innovative approach than what Apple was currently doing.
Right, right. Well, he ended up butting heads with CL9 with Apple. He was trying to contract the design firm Frog Design to get the product designed for him. And Apple had brought Frog Design to California with the idea that they were going to be their designers, their product designers. And Apple said, no, you cannot do that. That was part of their contract with them. He very much had an idea because he knew that these guys were innovators in the way things looked and felt. So it doesn't surprise me much that Woz likes the kinds of products that Apple comes out with. But, they had a similar design sense, but Apple did not appreciate that at the time. We didn't mention, but it's probably looking at the timeline here. Probably should mention some of the other things that he got into over the
sure.
years. Of course, he's been a speaker for many, many years now, including dating back to that time. He was a coveted personality for keynotes and different kinds of addresses. He started several companies. CL9 was just one of them. Wheels of Zeus was one of my favorites.
Yes, the acronym Wheels of Zeus is?
Woz.
Yep.
In 2001, and that was back in the early days of trying to come up with uses for GPS.
Yeah, the idea being that if you could have a wireless GPS network, then you would be able to locate stuff.
Really?
That was one of his ideas. He said he wanted to help people be able to locate things.
Yes. All right.
That was – yeah. So, yeah, and Woz, or as in Wheels of Zeus, not – Wozniak. But Wheels of Zeus lasted for about 5 years. It closed up in 2006.
Yeah.
Also, and in 1990, going back a bit.
Sorry
about that. No, it's fine. I just wanted to mention, you know, being a co-founder of the Electronic Frontier Foundation.
Yes.
I mean, this is huge. The Electronic Frontier Foundation, or EFF, is an organization that advocates for openness and freedom on the internet, in the computer world. They are also known for doing things like helping provide legal assistance to hackers that are being pursued by government officials or you know, by law enforcement. They're known for helping out folks who might otherwise be seen as troublemakers. But it's really all about promoting the freedom of information and the trying to keep as much of the manipulation or just trying to keep the government out of controlling technology in all its forms. Mainly, it tends over the last several years, it tends to mostly be about the internet, but it goes beyond that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they are very interested in, you know, privacy issues.
Yes.
Not to protect what you might call black hat hackers.
Right.
But more to give people the opportunity to control their technology lives a little bit more openly and do more with it rather than having that spoken for them.
Yeah. Wozniak has really come across as someone who wants the individual to have as much control and say in that sort of thing, and less of that should go to things like corporations and governments. So, you know, it's obvious why he would want to co-found an organization like the EFF. And in 2000, he was inducted into the Inventors Hall of Fame and also received the Heinz Award for Technology, the Economy, and Employment.
Yes, I wanted to mention the Heinz Award, so I'm glad you did that. And it's not the Heinz Doofenshmirtz Award.
No.
Curse you, Barry the Platypus!
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Guess what, Mango?
What's that, Will?
So iHeart is giving us a whole minute to promote our podcast, Part-Time Genius.
I know. That's why I spent my whole week composing a haiku for the occasion. It's about my emotional journey in podcasting over the last 7 years, and it's called Earthquake House.
Mango, I'm going to cut you off right there. Why don't we just tell people about our show instead?
Yeah, that's a better idea. So every week on Part-Time Genius, we feed our curiosity by answering the world's most important questions. Things like, when did America start dialing 911? Is William Shatner's best acting work in Esperanto? Also, what happened to Esperanto?
Plus, we cover questions like, how Chinese is your Chinese food? How do dollar stores stay in business? And of course, is there an Illuminati of cheese?
There absolutely is, and we are risking our lives by talking about it. But if you love mind-blowing facts, incredible history, and really bad jokes, make your brains happy and tune in to Part-Time Genius.
Listen to Part-Time Genius on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Mark.
I'm Greg.
I'm Brendan.
And this is a trailer for a new podcast called Get It to Dutch, A Screenwriter's Journey.
It's about screenwriting.
And a journey. The three of us play aspiring screenwriters on a quest to get a hit Hollywood script to famous producer Dutch Huxley.
Well, I would say one of us is aspiring and the other two are sort of struggling.
Which one of us is aspiring?
Well, they're going to have to listen to the podcast.
But I don't know, and I made the podcast.
Well, I made the podcast, and I think you guys were along for the ride.
So each week, we bring in a script, we read it, and then we give each other notes.
And you'll also hear about our adventures navigating the Hollywood system.
The show features amazing guests like Tim Robinson, Lily Sullivan, Weird Al Yankovic, and Rob Hubel.
Like any great blockbuster, it's filled with heartbreak, adventure, suspense, and just a little tasteful nudity.
And some distasteful nudity.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that, guys.
Listen to Get It to Dutch, A Screenwriter's Journey on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
But yeah, I mean, this is a period, the early 2000s, where we kind of didn't hear a lot from him. I mean, he's not the kind of person that you read about in the society pages so much.
Yeah, until the late 2000s.
Well, you know, making appearances on shows like Kathy Griffin, My Life on the D-List.
Yeah, he was dating her at the time.
Yes, yes. He's also been on The Big Bang Theory.
And, of course, Dancing with the Stars. Cutting a rug on a Segway.
Yes, yes. I watched some of that, and I have to admit, he showed a tremendous sense of humor about being on that show. He's as a dancer, he is a really incredible programmer.
Nice. Excellent compliment.
I am neither, so I really can't talk, but I will say that. But I think you would probably agree.
He seemed to really kind of have fun with his own, you know, public persona.
Yeah.
Although he's not, you know, he's not like a celebrity in the sense of jumping out and trying to attract attention. That doesn't seem to really be his style. He's even been known, like, on launch days for Apple products to go and wait in line at an Apple store.
Yeah.
There was one story where I remember it was one of the early iPhones, I want to say, where he was walking to the Apple store to go get in line, and then he got ushered into the front of the line. And he actually felt badly about it because he was like, you know, he didn't feel that he should necessarily be treated any differently than any other customer. But a lot of people who were in line are like, dude, that's Wozniak. He can totally go in. It's okay.
Yeah, I would imagine that he has enough of a following where, you know, there would be a certain amount of tolerance among the other shoppers that day.
Yeah.
He's also known, of course, over time to be a rather playful prankster of sorts. He's famed, of course, for many different stunts with $2 bills. I have actually tried to pass $2 bills, which are completely legal.
Yes,
and have people confused by them because you don't see them all the time, which,
right,
of course, lends itself to Woz's sort of sense of humor. Now, you can buy, as he will point out, complete sheets of $1, $2, and $5 bills from the Bureau of Engraving and Printing. Mm-hmm. You can get a sheet of an uncut sheet of bills. They're completely legal. They just haven't been cut apart. In fact, they're perforated. So he has been known to buy sheets of these, you know, separate them and have them laminated into a pad and go in and buy stuff and peel off a series of $2 bills, which are, of course, are, you know, numbered sequentially. It's very weird. $2 bills are weird to begin with.
Yeah.
And then you add that it looks like this guy just peeled off money and handed it to me. Am I supposed to take it? Apparently, he's been to Vegas and tried this stunt and had security people come and
talk to him
about exactly what's going
on. I've encountered Vegas security. I know exactly what you're talking about.
And, of course, if it were me, I would be sweating.
Yeah, like, but no, Wozniak just laughs about it.
He keeps doing, really? I didn't know that the government doesn't you know, make these perforated bills available? Really? I bought these from some guy.
Yeah. What's great is that
I wouldn't have had the nerve.
I should also point out that while $2 bills are unusual here in the United States, in other places there are $2 coins.
Oh, yeah.
So for our friends in Canada? Yes, and our friends in Canada, your toonies are very adorable.
I like toonies.
I actually do like toonies. I like loonies and toonies.
Yes, I agree.
If you would like to send me loonies and toonies, do so at the How Stuff Works address, care of Jonathan Strickland. Kids, go check your parents. No, never mind.
but yeah, what you were talking about innovation and openness in technology, he has recently, as of the time we're recording this in late 2012, been photographed in front of the large different versions of Google Androids with Android people. And people go, it's the Apple co-founder in front of the Androids. Well, yeah, because he tries pretty much everything.
Yeah,
he's actually a computer omnivore.
He actually says that he will, you know, he loves technology and he loves gadgets. Doesn't necessarily love what corporations are doing or what governments are doing, but he loves the technology. And he specifically, I had an hour and a half of sleep last night, folks. I went and watched The Hobbit. Anyway, so he specifically really likes platforms that are that allow you to do lots of stuff, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the Android platform gives a lot of flexibility to users. It's something that can be overwhelming to someone who's not necessarily an enthusiast.
Yeah.
But for someone who really likes hacking and getting their hands dirty with technology, the Android platform is very attractive because you can make a lot of changes yourself.
Yeah.
You know? And Google facilitates that. And depending on which handset manufacturer and which carrier you're with, it may or may not be very easy to do. But he also says he likes to try everything because he doesn't want to form a prejudice against any particular platform without giving it a real fair shot. And so he goes out, when a new phone comes out, he'll go out and buy it. So often, like, I've seen pictures of what Wozniak was carrying on a given day, and it's usually something like 5 or 6 smartphones, and then maybe a tablet, and then maybe 2 computers. It's like, you figure it's got to be around 50 pounds of technology at least.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the 90s version of Dilbert, where he used to have the gadget utility belt.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually knew some people like that.
Yeah. I used to try and do that, but then my pants kept falling down.
Dude, looking like a fool with the pants on the ground.
I was, in fact. Currently he's working at Fusion.io. What's Fusion-IO as a chief scientist, and that's the company is a data storage and server company. So he's currently, that's, you know, his technical job title at the moment, but he does do a lot of speaking events, and, you know, you'll still see him at things like TED conferences and other big events where, you know, they need to have someone there who really knows the ins and outs of technology, who is truly an advocate for technology for the consumer, and who just, you know, he's just very passionate and loves to share that with other people.
He really does.
It's a great couple of qualities to have. Like, there are a lot of people who are really passionate about what they do, but they don't necessarily communicate that or share that with people. But Wozniak seems like, you know, you would have to tie him down for him not to be ebullient over his love of tech.
Yeah, it's from just about all accounts I've read about Steve Wozniak, he's not the kind of person who hides his emotions very well. He's excited about a lot of stuff, and when he is, he shares that with you. I should say that he doesn't hide his excitement for technology very well, because he's really gregarious when it comes to that. He may not be necessarily outspoken about his personal life as much, or want to jump into the spotlight. But if you ran into him and he had 15 minutes to talk about some kind of technology with you, I don't think it would be much of a stretch based on, again, I've never met him, but if you wanted to strike up a conversation with him about virtually any kind of technology, I don't think he would turn you down.
Yeah.
Or if he did, he would do it politely.
Yes. Well,
he seems like just a great guy.
He does. He does. I would be very interested to talk with him, except I would be intimidated that would discover that I'm a complete idiot within like 2 minutes of chatting with me.
Well, I mean, it doesn't take the rest of us that long.
Well, you know, maybe I'm hoping that he would just have a lot of optimism. Well, that
I'm teasing.
That wraps up everything I have about Wozniak. Do you have anything else you wanted to mention?
Not really about Steve.
Well, Chris, do you have anything to say to our listeners?
Yeah, actually, I do.
Okay.
See ya. No, I'm teasing. I want to thank everybody for the opportunity to come into your, well, if this was a radio, I would say living rooms, into your computer headphones or earbuds or whatever you happen to be listening to us on. You all have been very supportive of tech stuff over the last few years. You know, certainly when Jonathan and I have had made mistakes on the podcast or said things that you found that you wanted to share with us, pretty much just about everybody has been really friendly about that, and we've opened a dialogue between tech stuff and the listeners, and I just feel like everybody has been really, really supportive and fun to work with. I'm leaving basically just because it's sort of a good time. Their tech stuff is going to be moving in a different direction. I have other stuff that I want to do that's not in the podcast world. So, you know, it's just sort of a good time for me to split off. But, I'm certainly excited to see what's going to happen with tech stuff in the days, weeks, months, years, millennia to come. there's still a boatload of tech that we haven't really talked about, and you know, it's going to be fun to see what they do with tech stuff once I've moved on. And Jonathan, too, I want to say thanks to you because it's been an awful lot of fun doing the podcast with you and all the other stuff that we've tech stuff live and different video projects that we've. That we've worked on together.
Remember
it's been
tweet
a
of the
fun.
Week?
Oh my gosh! Yes, and listener mail.
Oh gosh, listener mail.
In the infamous klaxon.
Yes.
It's been an awful lot of fun working with you, everybody. We tease each other about working together, but Jonathan and I have had fun working on it. I think I'm speaking for Jonathan safely in that case, and
that's safe.
The whole battle with Josh and Chuck, which was. Waged completely on the podcasts and not actually in the office.
Well,
and the vigor with which our listeners actually picked up on it. We're going, really? They seem to think we actually do hate each other.
No, we don't.
Those guys are great too. And you know, I really do appreciate everything that, Discovery and How Stuff Works has done. And, the listeners for tuning in every week and, sharing with us on social media. It's been an awful lot of fun. Thanks for everything.
Yeah, you know, and I just have to say, it has been it's been a heck of a ride, Chris. I mean, we are the last remaining original hosts of the first batch of podcasts that How Stuff Works put out.
That's true.
You know,
I hadn't thought about that.
Of all the other podcasts that have come out, their hosts have changed. Sometimes more than once.
Yep.
And we stayed the same team for over 450 episodes, which is an incredible achievement that you have not strangled me in that time. Considering that over that time, we spent more time together than I spent with my wife, that means that you and my wife are the two people in the world I can count on not to strangle me after prolonged exposure. And Chris has been my editor.
Yet.
For, thanks, yes, days early. Chris has been my editor for the last several years, and I've had four editors while How Stuff Works. And out of all the editors, Chris by far was the easiest to work with. Not to say that the other editors were bad. They were great people, too, and continue to be great people. But Chris would take it upon himself to do a lot of the work that normally would come back onto a writer. So I've been spoiled, and frankly, I'm scared now. But it has been a blast. It's been great, you know. Tech stuff would not be what it is without your contribution and your voice. The fact that we both have this sort of goofy, dorky sense of humor has really brought it together. It's evident in the podcast. It's evident in the videos. I think that my life would be totally different and much poorer for it if I had not gone on this podcast adventure with you. So thank you very much. And guys, that is it for the initial era of Tech Stuff. On the next podcast, the new era will begin. So if you would like to get in touch with me and my mysterious new co-host, whom you will meet very soon, you can write us at techstuff@discovery.com or contact us on Twitter or Facebook. Our handle there is techstuffhsw. And I'll talk to you really soon.
Thanks, everybody.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Guess what, Will?
What's that, Mango?
I've been trying to write a promo for our podcast, Part-Time Genius, but even though we've done over 250 episodes, we don't really talk about murders or cults.
I mean, we did just cover the Illuminati of cheese, so I feel like that makes us pretty edgy. We also solve mysteries like how Chinese is your Chinese food and how do dollar stores make money? And then, of course, can you game a dog show?
So what you're saying is everyone should be listening.
Listen to Part-Time Genius on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every week on Talk Easy with Sam Fragoso, I invite an artist, writer, or politician to come to the table and speak from the heart in ways you probably haven't heard from them before. Some of my favorites are with Tom Hanks, Questlove, and Cate Blanchett. In recent weeks, I talked to actor Dan Levy, director Ava DuVernay, and the editor of The New Yorker, David Remnick. You can listen to Talk Easy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.